From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. And to kick off the holiday Christmas season, we're going to be doing today The Nightmare Before Christmas. My name is Serge Delpierre, and today we have...
Heidi Hilliker.
And...
Michael Smith.
Our cue point for today is when you pop that DVD in and it starts playing before the movie starts, you'll see the beautiful Walt Disney logo at the very end of the Walt Disney Pictures logo when it fades to black. That is our cue. So while you're doing that, we are going to just talk a little bit about Nightmare Before Christmas, and then we'll get started when we're ready to go. I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play, and then you'll hit play, and then you'll get to hear us in sync with the movie if you're doing that, or if you're doing something else like wrapping presents or going for a jog or...
I don't know. Jogging and wrapping presents?
At the
that would be a feat.
At the same time.
If someone was doing that, I'd be really impressed.
During this bright holiday season. Shoveling
cooking
snow.
Turkey.
Cooking turkey, exactly.
Yeah, some stuffing.
So, who goes first? Who's seen Nightmare Before Christmas here?
I hope we all have.
I guess
many,
we have.
Many times.
Seasonally.
Really?
It's a seasonal favorite. You know what the best part about it is if you want to watch it, you can watch it twice in a year because you can watch it a Halloween and a Christmas,
exactly.
You know?
And actually, I thought that was rather clever when it came out. I'm like, oh, they've got this corner.
Yep.
It can be Halloween and a Christmas film.
Yep.
Pull it out both times. But would you consider it more of a Halloween or a Christmas film?
Maybe only slightly more a Christmas film, because it's Christmas time.
Yeah, Christmas sort of dominates. So anything that's even partially Christmas is more Christmas than Halloween, I think.
But it's still, I don't know. It's still a Halloween movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because
it's
Halloween characters at Christmas time.
But is it like the Grinch kind of thing?
As far as a Christmas?
Kind of a story.
Yeah, I guess. But it's not so much about a Grinch, because I don't really think Jack is ever like the Grinch, actually. Because his goal, even for Halloween, being in charge of Halloween, is bringing the spirit of Halloween to everyone. It's actually a very sharing mission. Whereas the Grinch... until the end of the film, doesn't want to participate with anybody or share anything. He's not really social.
He has no heart.
He has no heart.
But that's a different film.
It's a different film.
That's right. But this film. So what's your first time seeing Nightmare?
You know, I did not see it in the theater when it came out, and I'm not really particularly sure why. I think, I don't know, just one of those things. But I saw it like right away when it came out on VHS, the old VHS. Was always a big Tim Burton fan, even when I was little, and obviously a big fan of animation, a big fan of stop-motion animation, and I saw it right away and loved it, like everybody of my generation and the generations below mine and above mine. We all love it. I don't know.
And Michael?
Missed it in the theaters as well. I saw it shortly thereafter. When it came out on, I guess it would have been VHS at the time. Over the years, I would put it in my, probably one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. It's just a great movie.
Yeah.
I saw it on Betamax.
What? What?
No. Lies. When this came out, it did
lies.
Not.
I know. Betamax wasn't around anymore. No, actually, I think I saw this in the theater. I think I was when it came out, I think I was excited to see it, and I saw it, and I was less than impressed.
Oh,
burn. So you see, now this is a chance to see if I can be educated on how wonderful the night
Christmas is. At least we have a counterpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be contrary. It's just my reaction was lesser than what I thought it would be.
You had no idea it was going to be like this huge cult hit.
I don't know that it overwhelmed me the very first time I saw it, but it was one of those things that really grew on me after one or two viewings.
And that could be it. But I mean, the first viewing was, I mean, I thought, you know, I was like, oh, wow, Tim Burton. And I think this was the first Tim Burton animated stop motion film. So that's what was so exciting, because Tim Burton, you know, done live action, but obviously he was an animator before that. And for his illustrations to come to life in stop motion was really pretty exciting. I think as more as a function of the story, and maybe the execution of the story, than necessarily how it looked. I thought it was thrillingly looked. And of course, my favorite part of the film is when the kid pulls out the the little the shrunken head, which is of course in the trailer. So.
Yeah, I love the music. I think that, that's my favorite part of the whole film. Like,
and you know what? The music is what I think turned me off.
Yeah,
really.
I was about to say any music, like any musical, it's either gonna work for you or not work for you with the music. The whether the narrative or anything else falls short, it's really gonna be the music that either brings you back.
I guess that that's a good point, because I mean that would probably be the number one impression I had of the whole film, was that I love the music. I remember the first time I saw it, I wanted the soundtrack. I wanted to sing all the songs. I just love it. I have the soundtrack. I listen to it every holiday season.
So that may be it. Now, it is Danny Elfman. I understood that. Yeah. And Danny Elfman, of course, was awesome. And I had, you know, all the soundtrack stuff from Danny Elfman. But I think maybe either it was the music or it was the voices. Maybe Chris Sarandon didn't do anything for me. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember back, but honestly, I think I've seen it. I've seen it that one time, and maybe in passing parts of it since. But I do recognize it is a classic. Clearly, when I mentioned and suggested it, everyone was like, "Yes, yes, yes." So, I don't deny its power and its strength. It was my experience. On that note, hey, let's get going. Let's see if I can be redeemed.
We'll see. We'll see.
Okay, so the remote is in hand. Okay, so 3, 2, 1, play. And we are playing.
We are playing. Right away with music.
Yeah. It's one of those movies
that
the first few notes really even grabs me at this point, because I've seen it so many times, and it's like I feel the whole mythology coming through the opening notes.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I like the music itself, the Elfman music. I think it was the songs I just didn't like it.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Plus, it was really great. Well, I don't know. This movie was really good conceptually on a lot of levels. Like, the whole idea of having, like, different worlds for each holiday is just it's just lovely. It's splendid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And animation's fantastic. Like, there hadn't really been a lot of stop-motion animation for a long time, and it wasn't really popular when this came out. And it did a lot for that.
And this was directed by Henry Selick, who... I found out was actually did commercials, and he did the Pillsbury Doughboy commercials.
Oh, huh.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Oogie Boogie Man reminds me a little bit of Pillsbury Doughboy, I guess. I mean, in shape.
The opening song just really brings you into the world. It's so perfect,
and a great song to listen to on Halloween. This is where you can arguably, you know, watch it both.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, it's going to be desperately hard for me this entire film not to sing along.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to consciously be thinking about it the whole time.
Thank you.
I'm on it. I guess that's the hard part about doing a musical.
You know, the hard part of doing a commentary on a musical. Is the tendency would be to sing along to it. And...
I love the mayor. I would have to actually say this song and Making Christmas are probably my two favorite numbers.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Well, you know, I mean, Elfman has his background with Oingo Boingo.
Really?
Oh, yeah, that's where he came from.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Oingo Boingo, and then, and then he started doing soundtracks.
Huh. I didn't know that. And it's great about this opening number, too, is it introduces the entire, this world, you know, the world of Halloween and all the different characters that are going to come into play. Mm-hmm.
This is like, it reminds me of the story from,
fantastic.
Funny thing happened on the way to the forum, is that Sondheim? I don't know. I don't remember. It was funny. But anyway, the thing was that they'd done the show and they would just open it and nothing was happening. Nothing. And the story is that they had to go back and they did a song that basically told the story of essentially encapsulated the whole spirit of the show and did that, which is Comedy Tonight. And then that's what made the whole show a hit.
And then it's in the beginning?
It's the very first thing. So I am equating for you this.
Does so well to build up towards Jack's entrance here.
Yep.
When he just rises out. It's probably one of my favorite shots in any movie ever coming up right here.
I remember watching around the time that this came out, they did a lot of behind the scenes specials, and I think they were airing on like Disney Channel back on, you know, the old satellite era. And they just, what they had for Jack's head, and they had it for a lot of the characters too, but what they had was just a bunch of little heads.
Right.
And that's how, like, you know, the mouth itself didn't actually move on
the
character. They just switched the heads for different mouths and different eyes. And so they just had dozens and dozens of heads. Well, can you imagine?
No, apparently there were about 1,000 heads.
Yeah, look at all the articulation in his mouth, you know?
And that, I mean, that would be basically for everyone.
Yeah, I think they do that for most of the people.
Wow.
Instead of just having, you know, soft mouths that you could move with your finger, they just switch the whole head.
Now, who does the voice of the girl? Is it anyone we know?
I don't know.
This makes me think of Corpse Bride. Did you see that?
Yeah,
well,
the good version of this.
Oh, is that what it was?
Well, Tim Burton did Corpse Bride as well.
I think it was probably Henry Selick again, but yeah. I didn't see Corpse Bride.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think it was like, I think they were trying to capture maybe something they did with this, but it just isn't as good. The music's not as good. The voice acting isn't as good because they hired big time stupid Tim Burton actors instead of like people who can actually sing.
Oh.
And the story just isn't as good. The animation is, I don't know. I was very disappointed when I saw Corpse Bride. And I went and saw it in the theater and
Jack is sad. Why is Jack sad?
Because he wants more out of life. Aw, Sally.
She lost her arm.
But I like the way that they pull together a lot of different, and Tim Burton does this a lot, especially like in the good era of his career, which this falls into.
I think this is the Ed Wood part of his career too.
Yeah.
Which I personally think is his best film ever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was like the great era, though, that, you know, Ed Wood, Beetlejuice, Nightmare, you know, like this is when he was Edward Scissorhands. Like this was all
Edward
Scissorhands.
Yeah.
You know, now it's just like, I don't think Tim Burton's made a good film in a long time. And what did I just hear he was attached to? What is he making? Gosh, my brain is not on my side today.
Alice in Wonderland was watchable, but.
Oh, yeah.
Now I know what he's making. He's making, I think he's making a Wizard of Oz movie.
Oh, is he doing?
I heard that.
Oh, he's in Wizard of Oz with Robert Downey Jr.
I think so.
I think they're like the two competing Wizard of Oz films.
Yeah, there's two. Of course, I don't even know if I want to see either of them.
I was really excited not to, you know, tangent away from this film, but I was pretty excited about Alice in Wonderland, and then I was rather disappointed.
Oh, you know what else is great about this movie?
Yes,
Johnny Depp's not in it. That's what's great about this movie. Dear Tim Burton and Johnny Depp,
thou dost not
can
like
you take a
Johnny
break
Depp?
From each other? I mean, I used to until they like ruined it. It's like when you have two good friends and then they become a couple. And then all of a sudden you don't really like either of them anymore because them as a couple has canceled out what was really cool and interesting about both of them.
They're doing Dark Shadows next. That's
I know. And I'm like, I want to cry because I love
Dark Shadows.
Dark Shadows.
Oh, wow.
I love Dark Shadows. And
Johnny Depp's been talking about it for years
that he wants to do Dark Shadows. But I was just, I don't know, he and Tim Burton, they just, ugh.
That's nice. Now, did Tim Burton write the script for this? Or was this Caroline Thompson?
I don't know.
I think it was Caroline Thompson. Let's go to the internets.
Yeah, let's look at the internets. Then we can get answers to all these questions.
You know, when I saw this movie, it was sort of in that time period for me when I really became aware of film techniques, you know, shot framing and lighting and all those sorts of things. And one of the things that stays with me so much from this movie is its ability to create images that just linger with you and just stick with you for a long time.
Well, it's almost even more in something stop motion. Do you even have to consider all of those techniques, lighting and framing, because you're breaking it down into snapshots, basically.
Exactly.
So it's, I don't know. It's much more stressed, or it comes much more to the surface.
Mm-hmm. A few things. Danny Elfman is Jack Skellington's singing voice. So this is Danny Elfman singing.
Right. Yes. And that's why it's awesome.
Yes. And it works.
Yep. Because
he sang in Oingo Boingo.
A singer. He's not, no offense, Johnny Depp, but, you know, I mean, I'm not a singer either. It's okay. It's okay.
Oh, no.
I mean, you, like, I know some people who are actually musicians, singers and musicians. I don't have a great ear for it. You know, I mean, I have my own opinion, but I've never been, like, musically adept or anything. But when that Sweeney Todd film came out, everybody I know that knows anything about music was just, like, talking about how horrible the singing was. And even as someone who, like I said, I'm not very, you know, I don't understand it, music very well, I could even tell it wasn't great.
It was okay.
Yeah.
But it's Sondheim, and Sondheim's right, really exactly. tough. And, you know, I mean, Lynn Carew did Sweeney Todd on Broadway. Yeah, that just tells you, not that Johnny Depp's not a great actor, which he is a great actor, but, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they probably feel that, well, Lynn Carew or someone, you know, someone on Broadway can't, you know, can't sell it on screen, so.
Right.
Which is usually the problem. I mean, look at, you know, classic example, My Fair Lady. Julie Andrews, of all people, did that on Broadway, but she wasn't a big enough star to do.
Well, she was. I think she might not have been with the studio that was making it. You know how back then.
That was, yeah, that was like.
There was complicated politics, you know, like actors belonged to studios.
I don't know. Not in the 60s. There might have been something else. That might be a bad example. But
I think that's a bad example.
But
I mean, it's just like, I don't know.
Well, it's like, you know, Grease. We always like to talk about Grease. I don't remember who was on stage, but I mean, definitely when it came time to do the movie, you know, it's like they went to movie stars. They didn't go to anyone who had done it on stage. And we've seen that, you know, time and time again. So I think that was the case with Sweeney Todd, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to this.
But
film.
Again, about Nightmare, and which makes it so much better than Corpse Bride and stuff like that, is because they didn't rely on big stars. They did this, and you'll see that even now with a lot of animated films now. They won't get voice actors. They'll just throw in a bunch of big celebrities just so they can throw some names on a poster. But that doesn't make the animated film any better.
No.
And, you know, most of the best animated films that have ever been made are starring talent that are not regular big screen or small screen, you know, celebrities.
Yeah. As an example, if you look at Shrek, there's a couple little moments in there that really make me laugh. And invariably, it's those moments went to like animators and like post effects guy, and like just sort of these individuals who did temp voices for the thing. And then they ended up using their voices who weren't really anybody in particular of fame or notoriety. They just did great little bits for the film.
Well, and there are voice actors. There are actors that do this kind of work often and are much more skilled at it.
That's true. Right. That's true.
I mean, here in this film, the biggest names you have are Paul Rubens and Catherine O'Hara, other than Chris Sarandon.
Right, but of course, and those both seem to be people to me that would do character voices, that would do animated voices. They're not, you know, they have a little bit of like a little bit of cred to me on that level.
Well, yeah, I mean, as opposed to, and this is no diss to Paul Newman whatsoever, but you know, let's put Paul Newman in Cars, which of course was his last role before he passed away. But
I mean, he still rocked it out, though. I'm gonna say,
I've never seen Cars, so
he really did rock it out. Paul Newman could never not excel at something he was given to do, I think.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
I think he did a really good job with that.
Yeah, it was probably the best part of that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
There wasn't much else to it.
And he's...
And I love Pixar films.
He's a Hudson Hornet. He's like... The car he is, I actually have like this fascination with, and this is probably the reason I even like this movie, is because there was a big businessman in Detroit named J.L. Hudson, and starting a very popular department store chain called Hudson's that was later destroyed because it was bought out by Marshall Fields, which was bought out by Macy's, and then the one downtown Detroit was imploded. But for a short time, he also had a car manufacturing company, and it was the Hudson Car Manufacturing Company. I mean, those cars are like really rare.
Wow.
So to be pulled out for an animated film, I thought was
that's
pretty impressive
nice.
that they thought about that.
Now, how did he find this place, or did he just go wandering?
He went wandering. He was just sort of lost. It's sort of the, you know,
this is like the meeting point of all the worlds.
Well, it's like, you know, the beginning of the Divine Comedy, where he's wandering through the woods and finds this little door. There's that sort of.
I like that.
That sort of thing you see again and again in mythologies, where they lose themselves in the woods or some sort of environment.
Well, and if they're being pulled there by fate.
Yes, exactly.
Know? It's like that what's the word? Like that walkabout, you know? They go on a journey.
Actually, the thing I was about to comment on that is that what I like most about that moment is it sort of goes past fate, because it gives him that moment.
Song is great.
Gives him that moment where he looks at all the doors and he sort of chooses which mythology he wants to involve himself in.
But it's the tree.
It's great. Yeah, it's the tree.
It's the tree. He gets sucked in. He's like, what's that? Mm-hmm. It's shiny.
That is a very pretty Christmas land.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yep.
But I feel exactly like him. I remember seeing this for the first time and just being like just as excited as he was. Because could you imagine if you came from something that was all like dark and like gothic and then you just like come into Christmas?
All right. These guys I'm going to have to really fight not to sing along with.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, then I'll talk over and ask you some questions while we're doing this.
Look how cute he is. That's another great idea, you know, like trying to incorporate him into a snowman.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just smart. It's just smart.
I think maybe the difference, I'll just say it. I think the difference is I saw this when I was a little older.
Maybe.
And there was nothing really, I saw it in the movie theater. I mean, honestly, I think I saw it in the movies and there was just nothing to really suck me in for me at that time.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that I can't, it's just whatever. Okay, you know. Kind of thing.
And another thing.
And I think as a child, this would be a fascinating film.
Well, and I think another thing that's great about it too is because a lot of the really classic, fantastic holiday films like Frosty and Rudolph, those are all stop motion. And so I think like there's something that's in your mind that, you know, you just subconsciously like associate a holiday film with being stop motion and you already feel like you know this. You're there. You understand this world.
Oh, I loved Rudolph. Rudolph was
and it's
awesome.
Like that's where these people are. You know, they're in that like Rudolph Frosty world. And Jack's like, oh, what? I don't know anything about that. I think that's what's fun about it, too, is the message of the movie is so good, too. Because it's all like discovery and being open to like understanding and exposing yourself to something that you don't understand or that's different than your culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think once again, I think it has to do with the time in my life when I saw it. It was just like, oh, okay. Not denying it, this animation is incredible.
I mean, incredible.
Well, because considering, I mean, when I was young, when I started making films in my teens, I did animation. So, and this is stuff I would dream of doing.
I mean,
this is like way more complicated than anything I could do, you know. Most complicated thing I did was with plasticine, and that was not easy. This is all models. I mean, look at the model work is incredible.
And I love that introduction to Santa, you know? like you just see the shadow of him, which is a very horror movie kind of way, suspenseful kind of way of introducing a character, not a very, you know, holiday way.
But it was great because Jack was looking and then he sees the guy and he gives him the eye.
Yeah.
So it's all like from his, you know, how, because once again, Jack does come from the horror world.
Right. Like he doesn't know what, I just can't even imagine what that would be like inside. I'm trying to think of a similar like situation that we could understand, but I don't even know.
Well, but also this world, everything's desaturated.
Yeah.
I mean, even though there's nice colors in there, but it's desat and how they did the colors with, is it called Christmas Land, Santa Land? We don't really know.
Well, this world is fairly monochromatic, whereas the other world is
like
all popping
Christmas
with.
Town.
That's called Christmas Town. What's this called? Halloween?
Halloween Town. Okay. I don't know.
Deadly Nightshades.
I love Sally.
It's so gothic. Well, what's great also is because, you know, Tim Burton is essentially fancies himself as a goth, which I guess he is. And he's really been able to, and there were some films where he was really able to delve into it, like with this and with Edward Scissorhands and.
Well, pretty much everything. Everything he's ever done.
I don't think Planet of the Apes, no.
Well, no, but that doesn't count because that's bad.
Now, Sleepy Hollow, I got to say, Sleepy Hollow was technically amazing, and it was the biggest piece of crap at the same time.
It's my least favorite Tim Burton film. Probably.
Amazing to look at.
Johnny
the
Depp
effects
was, I thought,
incredible.
Was amazing. The character.
Sleepy Hollow.
That, yeah, I
specifically
character.
Did not like really? his and Christina Ricci's acting. Didn't like.
Yeah,
it.
No, I didn't like it. I don't really like Sleepy Hollow. It's definitely on my very bottom of my Tim Burton list.
The effects were amazing.
Yeah.
See, that's actually
and it
what
looked
I,
incredible.
That was actually the downfall for me, is I did not want to see the CG animation in that movie. I felt like
I didn't even should
not have had it in it.
See, I did, for me, it all flowed, and the art direction, just how it looked.
That's when I really started signing like Tim Burton off. Like the only
Sleepy Hollow was it.
Since Sleepy Hollow, the only up Tim Burton has had with me,
Planet of the Apes,
was Big Fish. I really liked Big Fish.
I avoided it, but I guess maybe I can give it a try.
I really, really liked Big Fish.
I liked it. It's not one that works well for me on repeat viewings, but the first time I saw it, I really liked it.
I really like it. I've seen it. I've seen it several times. I think, I don't know. But then again, guess who wasn't in it?
Johnny Depp.
Yep, or Helena Bonham Carter. Like, stop putting your lady in the movies. Yeah. I love Helena Bonham Carter,
Helena
too.
Helena Bonham Carter was in the movie. She was the
witch. She was. You're right, she was. But that was before they got together. So that was before she was ruined. I'm just saying.
Oh, that's... Yeah, they got together on Planet of the Apes. That's when he dumped Lisa Marie, who was also on Planet of the Apes. So that must have been awkward.
Awkward. And that's okay. Another thing I like about the imagery of this film is everything that's in the Halloween world looks so quintessential Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
And everything that's in the Christmas world looks so quintessential Christmas. It's so perfect.
It does look quintessential Christmas, but it's not perfect lines, if you notice. There's still that skewing of the lines and the curve. I mean,
Halloween has that timber. German expressionism that
which perfectly works for this.
Burton
yeah.
has just been in love with for so long.
Well, yeah. Look at that bell. That bell is off. Wonderfully deformed.
But what's funny is that, like, our view of Christmas is actually a quintessential German view of Christmas as well.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, the Western Christmas is almost completely comes from the German view of Christmas. The Christmas tree.
Oh, Tannenbaum?
The star, the lights, gingerbread men. Like, most things you can associate with Christmas, it comes from Germans.
Huh.
You know, we don't pick up on a lot of the other things that, like, other cultures. I mean, we don't do, like, Advent wreaths and stuff like that, like the Swedes do or anything like that. We do primarily what the Germans do for Christmas.
That's interesting. And that probably came over, like, several centuries ago.
Oh, yeah, because sure.
Have you seen The Ref? Remember The Ref?
No. I remember about it.
They
I've
did
never seen
thing
it.
At the dinner where they're doing like a, I don't know if it was Norwegian or some sort of Christmas thing like that, where they've got like wreaths on their heads and they're serving some sort of fish for dinner and you know, some sort of alternative way of doing Christmas.
A great
Christmas movie too, by the way.
This is...
The Ref is a great Christmas movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I love this, though. Like, this is a really great scene. Like, with Jack coming back and trying to... And then I love how he tries to explain Christmas to them and show them what it is. Mm-hmm. But it's all from his perspective, too, because he still doesn't really... It's like a child, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a child trying to explain something they saw and missing part of the understanding.
Calls him Sandy Claus.
Yeah. And nobody gets it.
They don't get the concept of presents.
Yeah, he's trying to, because he saw something that he can't even conceptualize yet, you know, but he felt it, and they don't understand, because it's pretty.
Is it ever explained what they do on Halloween? Because we don't see them actually doing Halloween, do they?
In the beginning, they kind of do in that opening number. They do a little bit
what they do on Halloween,
right? Like they're like the goblins under the bed that scare people, and they put like the spiders everywhere, and like the cobwebs and jack o' lanterns. And
but we never see Halloween celebrated in this film, do we?
No, because it's just after Halloween.
Well, yeah, like in the very beginning of the film, they're just coming back. It is Halloween. Essentially, still. They're, like, just coming back from Halloween.
Okay, so maybe structurally, I'm going to throw something out there. I know this is a Christmas film, but maybe it could have started before and could have seen them doing the whole Halloween thing, and then there's the whole letdown from Halloween, and you know, Halloween's done, and that's it for a year, and what are we going to do now?
Well, that is kind of actually what happens in the beginning, because they're all celebrating Halloween, and then Jack comes out and they're like, yay, Halloween was a success again because Jack is so awesome.
Right.
And then Jack is, that's what actually makes him go on that walking through the woods, is he's like, oh, Halloween's over. What am I going to do? There's got to be more to life than this. And that's when he goes off wandering through the forest and finds Christmas.
Right. And maybe, I mean, I'm just saying, for me and my experience of watching it, maybe I didn't get enough of that. This is just me. Maybe I just, it didn't sink in. It's like, oh, okay. I don't know.
But again, it's only an hour and 15 minutes.
It is very short.
And it's the nightmare before Christmas.
It is a Christmas film.
Okay. Right.
That's right. It's not the nightmare after Halloween.
Right.
Okay. Ooh, that was nice.
I love
he scared me.
I love how it's this wonderfully dark world full of monsters, but they're not malevolent
at all.
No,
they're not.
It's like Monsters, Inc.
They don't know anything.
Exactly. It's a similar sort of thing.
This is just what they don't really actually want to hurt anybody. Like, even when, like, they're talking about the Halloween stuff, it's all just scares and pranks and tricks, you know? And they think that stuff cool. Like, they think shrunken heads, and it's like when they're starting to make the Christmas presents.
Exactly.
And they kind of just, like, completely miss it because
Idea of what would be a good gift.
Right, that is their idea. They're like, this is cool, right? This is fun.
which takes us to the scene of where everybody does get those gifts, which is just...
See, which is... That's my favorite
fantastic part.
Yeah, that's my favorite. Yeah.
My favorite part. Show us what you got there, honey.
But that's why I think that making Christmas number is probably like the best one in the entire film, because you see them trying to do what they think Christmas would be.
Right.
They just don't know. It's so sweet and just like completely innocent, because they just have no idea.
What's one of the amazing things about this film is it at one end of things really has a reverent view of Christmas and really does what all Christmas movies do in terms of celebrating Christmas. But at the same time has a touch of iconoclasm, where it takes Christmas imagery and kind of turns it on its head, and where kids are getting gifts that are attacking them and that sort of thing. So it manages to sort of do both at the same time, which is a rare and unique thing, I think, for a film.
Well, and what I like that it sets up too is that, you know, they all live in these holiday worlds, and basically what each holiday world is in charge of is providing us in the real world a taste of that holiday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I guess that's what it is. And what I think is interesting is when they try to bring this, like, this Halloweenized Christmas to people, they're not being received by like the real world the same way that they're received at Halloween. At Halloween, everybody likes what they're doing, and then they come and they do it for Christmas, and it's another like level in this, oh, we don't understand, we're not connected, why don't you want to receive this now? And it's like, but that's not what we're looking for at this time of year, or that's not, I don't know. It's just everything about it is just, it's such a great concept. It's just really well thought out. I mean, I just want to know, you know, I want to know the day that someone was sitting there and was like, well, what if the people who make Halloween wanted to make Christmas? Like, I mean, that's such a great idea. And then he tries to go about it scientifically, because he can't emotionally and logically like understand what this feeling he's having is, mm-hmm. or what it's all about. He's like, maybe I can figure it out with science, which is also a very like gothic horror kind of thing to do.
Actually, you're right, very much 19th century.
Right. I mean, you wouldn't see Santa Claus doing this, you know. He's like, oh, I'm not going to... Santa Claus wouldn't try to figure out Halloween with you know,
he's trying to figure
science out
a snowflake. He makes a spider. That's pretty funny.
He can't be anybody but himself. That's what I love about this scene.
Right.
He tries to make a Christmas thing, and it comes out a Halloween thing.
Well, and we all know he excels at making Halloween.
Exactly.
He can't even help it. He's just so naturally talented at making Halloween.
But that's the thing. In a way, and I don't remember how this ends. So in a way, this is good. But his, you know, his journey is that, I mean, as I'm seeing it right now, is he's really good at that, and he should keep on doing that. But he wants to do something else, because he wants to
he wants
to move beyond who he is.
Right. He just wants more out of life.
Right. He knows he's gifted, but he wants to move beyond what he feels are his limitations and his gifts.
He overlooks Sally in the process.
Yeah. Aw. I do like that this incorporates so many like classic kind of horror kind of storytelling things. You know, you got like the Frankenstein, you've got like the evil scientist.
Is she trapped?
Yeah, she's like a slave to the scientist.
Okay.
He made her.
He stole her arm, okay.
Yeah, and she keeps on trying to kill him so she can escape.
You have that sweet little moment where she like lowers the bucket down into the grave, and then just macabre, she throws herself out the window and blink opens the eyes. I think that's what really sort of rang true with me when I saw this movie, was that it just did not have, you know, a lot of Christmas movies, it becomes so one-dimensional, and then it celebrates Christmas and...
Right, it's just about, it's very just about good feelings.
Yeah, whereas this really played on a lot of different kinds of darker images, but still worked in those Christmas themes, which is just fantastic. I love the band.
Yeah, the little band.
The constantly out-of-tune band.
But I always believe they're really making that music.
Yeah.
I also like this concept that they have, too, where there's, like, levels of bad guys. You know what I mean? There's, like, the really bad guys, and then there's, like, the good bad guys.
I love that formula.
Chestnuts over an open fire.
Divided by.
Jingle bells.
12 in the square root of December 25th.
He just doesn't get it. Because it's not logic. That's a great message of this film, you know? Like, feeling good isn't logical.
Right.
But joy and sharing and, like, spirit isn't a logical thing. Aw, and neither is love. Love is also not logical. Aw, Sally.
Where'd she go?
I'm pretty sure she just got captured back by the... Or she had to run away, yeah. Because that guy... Like, the thing is, just she's really, like, the slave for that guy. And he's, like, really important. He's like the mad scientist guy of the town.
Mad scientist, evil stepfather.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's very kind of Rapunzel-like.
That's you a know, lot she's in the fairy tale.
Yeah, she's
sure.
in the tower, and mm-hmm.
how did
they,
she?
They play on a lot of fairy tale elements, which I think really works for the film as well.
That is horrible.
It's
look at her face.
Foreshadowing. We got some foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Having
wow.
a vision. Vision
yeah,
of the
like
future.
Yeah, like a vision of the future. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great touch. It gives you that element of something bad is going to happen.
Well, it's a movie. Something bad's got to happen, well, or else it's going to be pretty boring. I love the vampires. And they have to go to sleep.
The Greek chorus of vampires.
And the werewolf.
And they none of them get it.
It's so odd to have a Christmas movie like be stuck in Halloween world. Maybe that's what threw me off.
It is a strange juxtaposition for sure, but it,
not that I don't like Halloween. Don't get me wrong.
I think you almost need to have the same reverence for Halloween as you do for Christmas. And if you
you have to love them both exactly the same, which I do. That's why I like to watch it either time. They're my two favorite holidays.
I'm going to go back to the music. Not the music, but the songs. For some reason, the songs... I don't know. I mean, I'm watching it for like the second or third time, so...
I love it. I, like, again, like I'm saying, like I know all of this by heart. Like, I'm holding back, like singing along with it. There's actually a really great album if people like the music like I do. It's called Nightmare Revisited. I got it last year for Christmas, and it's like... it's all these different... bands and different musical
really?
Groups like doing each one of the songs, and it's fantastic.
Wow.
Some of them are just instrumental, but some of them, you know, they also do sing them. I just also find Jack to be like a relatable character. I don't know. Yeah. I feel very like I think even when I was younger, I just feel very like I understand him, you know?
Maybe that's what it is. I get him, but I'm not necessarily identifying with him.
Right.
He has that moment. It's, the answer's right in front of me, and it's just the wrong answer. He's got Sally out there, but he thinks it's this, you know, to become...
Because he
Santa
wants
Claus.
More, and he can, and that's what he finds, you know, at the end. Like, more isn't, like, taking something else. Like, what he wants is to really have that joy inside, and once he can have that relationship, he'll have it.
Christmas lights.
That's cool.
So good. So
that
good.
Is cool.
Eureka.
That would be good to do, you know, would be good to do a Nightmare Before Christmas Halloween party.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you just basically decorate with with Halloween stuff, but then you Christmasize it all.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
This is making me think of Coraline also, which
I
saw.
I love Coraline.
I think that was Henry Selick also.
Well, I think so, yeah.
I mean, it's good to see that there's a market for stop-motion films and someone's still actually making some of them.
Yeah.
Though I know a lot of it's been, you know, a lot of the stop-motion stuff that was done for special effects have been taken over by CG.
Which never looks as good.
No. Well, it looks different. It looks different.
I love this. I love when he's giving out the assignments to people. This is fantastic. Kidnap the Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah. These guys are great.
Yep. See, that's their job. They're the trick-or-treaters. They're scary trick-or-treaters.
Yeah, now these guys are actually malevolent, but they still have this
endearing
quality.
Yeah, there's like this little innocence about them. Like, because they're just they're like the tricksters, you know, that's like their little, they're like the little pucks of this world. That's just their job. They, you know, it's just
their
nature.
Function.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, is there anyone who's truly bad evil in this film?
Yeah,
the Oogie Boogie Man.
Oogie Boogie Man is.
Oh, I forgot about the Oogie Boogie Man.
Which is like, I think the animation in the Oogie Boogie Man part is fantastic. It's so good. Like, they do it all in blacklight. It's amazing.
I have a vague memory of it. Well, now look at the rats. I mean, that's amazing. They even got that working.
I love the textures, too. I like the texture
absolutely.
Of the landscapes.
Just all the models and everything.
Yep. Like, it almost looks like everything's built out of little matchsticks sometimes.
It's probably about that size.
Yeah. Let's draw straws. They're really just bones. I love that.
I think Paul Rubens is one of those voices. I think he's the voice of Locke.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh. God, this song's really good, too. This is a great number.
Look at the eye light.
See, now I kind of like them.
Yeah, I kind of like them, too. They're like the little tricksters.
Yeah. I kind of... oh, no.
They just like to cause some problems, you know? They just like to antagonize a little bit.
Maybe what I didn't like about Jack was that he didn't feel like he was having fun. I feel like these guys.
Yeah, they're totally having fun.
They're having fun, and that's why I'm like, I kind of like.
Because they're
him.
Not worried.
Whereas Jack, I mean, I'm all for the angsty thing.
He's
but
just melancholy.
I'm all totally for the angsty thing. For some reason, I didn't tap into his angst.
Wow. I think he's just going through some sort of like Edgar Allan Poe moment, you know? It's true, and this is like a Burton film, so you know it's true.
Oh yeah. Now that I'd like
I never
to
thought of Jack on heroin before. That's an interesting.
that I'd like to see. I'd like to see. Well, they are making actually an Edgar Allan Poe film. I think John Cusack's playing Poe, but I would love to see Tim Burton actually do an Edgar Allan Poe story.
Yeah, I would love to see actually Fall of the House of Usher.
Now that's a good Tim Burton's Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah, I think if Johnny Depp is in it, I'm not going to see it.
With Johnny Depp as Roderick Usher and Helena Bonham Carter
as the sister
as Madeline, and then who is the stranger?
I don't know. It's the guy. I forget what the stranger's name is.
Paul Giamatti.
Oh yeah, no, it's got to be someone else that just gets overused in Burton films.
Christopher Walken. He's been in one. He was great in Sleepy Hollow in that one.
But see, that's
part.
What I like about like that good era of Burton films is because like he used a lot of different people. You know, it wasn't all. I mean, there were like repeats, but there was diversity as well.
Well, you know, and really, it's not even so much the people; it's the imagination that was in the films back then, as opposed to
let's just
remake everything that's already been made now and
and
do it with the Tim Burton
spin
flair. Yeah,
on it, which exactly. I just the Alice in Wonderland. What a POS.
I was able to get through it, but
Oh, totally was able to get through it, but I was so disappointed in the end.
And I can't even believe it made that much money. Like, though America, wake up.
I have to say that I really like Johnny Depp in it. I thought he was insane. And I never really thought of the Mad Hatter as insane. And
he's the Mad Hatter, Serge.
But he's never been played as, like, really, truly as in psychotic, which is what Johnny Depp did. I've never seen him like that, ever. As in, like, I could be homicidal.
I don't know. Did you ever see the Disney animated film? He's pretty freaking scary.
He was, but he's not that scary. And I liked Anne Hathaway as the White Queen.
I hated it. Did you ever see the miniseries that was on TV? It was
the, like, NBC version a few years back?
No, it was on in, like, probably like the 70s. Carol Channing's in it.
Oh, no.
And she plays the White Queen. Madeline Kahn plays the Red Queen.
Oh, Madeline Kahn's great.
It's. I think it was Alice Through the Looking Glass, and it's fantastic. Like, they capture everything. They get all of the Alice in Wonderland type mythology, the Alice Through the Looking Glass mythology. You get to have the Queen of Hearts. You get to have the chess pieces. You get to have the awesome, scary Jabberwocky. It was really good. And I think pretty much everything else has been sad. Sad.
I didn't see it, but...
Yeah, that one's good. Oh, and we didn't even mention the horrible Charlie and the Chocolate Factory film.
Oh, let's not talk about that.
I avoided that. Though it's got the short guy. What's his name? Deepa. He's awesome. Have you seen him in other things? He's a great actor.
The
short guy.
Is he a midget?
I think you'd qualify him as a midget. I don't know, but his name's Deep something. And I mean, he's from South Asia. But he played all the Oompa Loompas.
As they say in Big Lebowski, I don't believe that's the first.
Who is in the bag? I looked away again. Is it the Easter Bunny?
Little people.
What?
Was it just the Easter Bunny in that bag? I forget.
Yes.
See, but this is another thing I like about Jack, too.
Look at the shiver.
Is that we're under the understanding that, like we see Jack being all sweet and stuff like that, but every once in a while he pulls up the scary thing, and he scares the crap out of these little kids, you know?
Right. See, I could see Jack doing Easter.
I'd love to see that. They should make a short.
The Nightmare Before Easter?
Yeah, you know.
What's great is that, you know, this is like, if he ever had a chance to make Frankenstein, he would have done it like this, but instead he got to make this film, which is so much better.
Which is so much better because Frankenstein's been done. Give us something new.
And this is humorous. I mean, actually, no, Frankenstein's got to be done as a comedy. I've just decided. It can't be done seriously anymore.
Yeah, it's called Young Frankenstein.
Mel Brooks.
Well, beyond that, but it's got to be done again.
They're going to remake it. Give Tim Burton some time.
Remake Young Frankenstein. Young Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
They already turned it into a god-awful musical. What else do you want?
Was it that bad? Was the musical bad?
Yeah.
No. It's a shame. Did you ever see The Producers?
Yeah. I actually thought The Producers was
the
good.
The movie? The musical?
I've seen both.
Oh, the movie of the musical?
The movie of the musical was
awful.
The
TV show
awful.
Of the movie of the...
The movie of the musical was bad.
Oh, no, the movie of the musical was bad.
Bad,
but
yes.
The movie
the original
is good.
Movie
the movie was good.
And the musical was good on Broadway. I saw it.
Oh, cool.
I saw it when it had Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick in it.
I can see totally how on Broadway would work.
Yeah, it would totally work on Broadway.
The movie was just what?
And if you had already seen the movie before, which I had, it was really fun seeing like a lot of like the songs and like the concept of the play that they were producing being kind of more fleshed out, you know?
Right.
Now I'm fighting to keep from breaking out in the springtime.
Springtime for Hitler.
Springtime for Hitler.
Yeah. That's so good. This is my favorite part. Making Christmas.
They're making Christmas. I like the bats.
No, the best part is when they actually deliver the Christmas gifts.
The two worlds collide. That's what I remember. I remember that distinctly. It's like something
I love
happened.
That laugh.
We see structurally. I mean, we're only 42 minutes into the film, so. See, that's a quintessential Tim Burton design. Look at that. You see that in Beetlejuice, actually, that design with the tentacles and all that.
Yeah, tentacles, stripes.
He
likes that a lot.
He loves the stripes. Have you all seen Vincent?
Oh, it's been a while, but yeah.
No.
I saw it a long time ago. It's pretty good, actually.
And what was the one he did?
Frankenweenie.
Frankenweenie.
Which I think he's been trying to make as a feature film.
I'd watch it.
It was an animated feature film.
Yes.
That's great.
Nesting dolls with.
So I mean, they're serious. Aww. They've been spending at least a month getting ready to compete with Santa.
Right, who's been getting ready all year.
Of course, because that's what Santa does. Oh, look at those elves. These are really cool designs for Christmas.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have that Burton-esque, I mean...
It does, but it doesn't.
Like the gothic Burton-esque aspect. They're reanimating the reindeer skeletons. This is awesome.
There's almost a kind of steampunk aspect to Burton's work, too, in that I don't know if it's the same era of technology, but he sort of sticks with this certain era of technology in everything that it's created. And when they make, you know, when Edward Scissorhands is made.
Which is which is gothic.
Yeah, yeah,
the whole thing of essentially industry and technology kind of invading life, but not life having adjusted to it.
But it's a very kind of, it's Frankenstein. That's his, you know, that 1900s, that like Mary Shelley.
Oh, this is, yeah.
That's his technological era
completely.
That he harks to often. Because it's that kind of like mad scientist kind of.
Right, right.
Yep. Well,
technology, you know, lightning.
He so doesn't get Christmas.
But I love how happy he is right now about making it, you know, like, and he thinks, and that's another precious thing about him is that he thinks he's really doing it and doing it well, you know? Aw.
There's Mrs. Claus. Mrs. Claus.
And I love, like, they do really try to make this, this stylistic contrast between the Christmas world and...
Well, just the colors alone.
Everything, though, you know?
He does strike me as being Germanic. A Germanic, Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And actually, when you think about it, I mean, well, I guess the Gothic style is, in a way, bit English, bit German.
Yeah.
Especially, well, as a kind of re-expressed by German Expressionism.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what we know as Gothic style is actually German Expressionism. Misinterpreted.
Maybe.
Oh,
look at his beard. Still stuck with candy. Poor Santa. He is so confused.
He's got candy
and
corn
scared. Aw.
I like the bathtub with feet.
Yeah. But I love that, like, Sally kind of got this from, like, the get-go. Like, she's, like, the only one who had, like, any kind of idea that maybe this was all wrong.
Well, she's the intuitive one in the movie.
Right. And she almost seems to be the only character in this entire film that is being forced to do things. Everybody else has assignments or has things they do, you know, on their own, out of their own will and out of their own behalf. And she's the only one who seems to be in this kind of like position where she's made to do things she doesn't want to do. Maybe that gives her more insight. I don't really know.
Here he is making a new mate.
Yeah. You will have half my brain. Oh. Naughty children never get any presents. Look at his funny little holly leaf underwear. Oh, Oogie Boogie Man.
I'm so excited. Introduction to Oogie Boogie.
I love that he's so like fat that it like pushes out the pipe all the way down. And I love that they went that way with when making his Santa. They just decided to make him like as fat as possible. Like every, you know, like, they really like it to the extreme of every legend. Oh, so Santa's roly-poly-oly and jolly. Yeah. We're going to make him really roly-poly-oly and jolly.
It's you know, continuing with the exaggeration of elements.
Yeah. Oh, Oogie Boogie. Oh, this is so good.
His voice is so great.
Yeah. And then the black light is just such a good device to use. I mean, it looks incredible.
It's really a voice that sells it, too, because when you got, you know, the worst guy in Halloween town, he's got to be pretty impressive. So.
Right. And I like this, you know, because everybody's familiar with the idea of a boogeyman. But it's like, you know, I don't think that there's a visual that's attached to that. Right. You know, everybody's boogeyman is different to them. And I like that now that I like this concept of what he might look like, which is really just like some sack that's been like possessed.
And well, he's still kind of amorphous and open to interpretation.
Right. Yeah. He could still be anything.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I mean, but the animation on him is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I mean, it is outstanding.
Mm-hmm. And I like this too, because, you know, like obviously, like gambling is generally associated with like sin and like bad things. So of course, you know, the boogeyman, he's a gambler.
You know, this could possibly be done as a musical, Broadway musical.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think it would be as good.
Why would you do that?
Because like so the majority of what's so awesome about it is the animation.
Money, exactly. Dude, money.
Well,
it's money.
Right, but there's also the ability to lose money.
You get people.
I mean, have you heard about this Spider-Man shenanigans?
Oh, wait, Spider-Man.
You know, it'll end up it'll end up working
out. Hang on, wait. I think there's a difference between this becoming a Broadway musical and Spider-Man being a musical.
I mean, other than the fact that this already has music.
Well, exactly. Spider-Man, there was never music in the musical. That's like, I don't know. It is one of the more wrong-headed things. It's like Carrie the musical.
I had not heard of that.
Oh, yes. Oh, look it up. Oh, it was a disaster. Actually, they're trying to get it up and going again.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorts of ideas out there.
I love Sally's like, okay, good.
She's like, okay, in the clear.
She knows it's a bad idea.
She had the vision. No good can come of this.
She's like, this is a bad idea. This is only going to hurt everyone. And especially it's only going to hurt Jack, who she most cares about.
And, well, so. Now, so far, of course, I don't remember the end, but is the message that you should basically, while you may dream and aspire to do whatever, you should stick to what your mission is? Is that the moral?
No, it's more like.
I think it's more like be true to who you are.
Yeah,
don't
be true to yourself.
That's what I'm saying. Well, but I'm saying the same thing. In other words, be true.
No, but it's kind of saying a different thing. Like, there's one thing saying be complacent to what you're good at.
Yeah.
And don't try to do something else. I mean, that's kind of a negative message. Whereas be true to who you are is a positive message.
Be open to.
I didn't really say it the way you're saying it better than I said. But I'm saying that his mission, I mean, what he's good at, I mean, what his life mission is, what he's good, what his path, what he's successful at.
And sometimes wanting more isn't.
It's not bad.
Well, it's identifying what you want. Like, because he's lonely and he wants love in his life. That's why he's going after this Christmas thing, but he doesn't know how to identify that for himself because he doesn't know what that is.
So it's misguided because he's not looking in the right place.
Right.
And this is, it's misguided energy.
Right, but what he wants is real. And he does end up getting it with Sally. But he just, he's looking for it for some, looking for what he needs somewhere else instead of, you know.
Right. Well, he doesn't know how to, he didn't channel it in the right place.
Right.
He channeled it trying to find, in terms of what he does, because what he does is he does Halloween.
Right.
Well, let me do something else. Ooh,
right, there's Christmas.
As opposed to him.
But I think the reason he wanted to do Christmas in the first place is when he saw Christmas Town, he knew that it was about that, like, love and that joy. But he still can't identify what that is.
Right.
That's why he's reaching for that, I think.
Right.
What you want and what you need are often different things. And in this case, what he needed was right in front of him and he overlooked it.
Well, I mean, what he needed, he just didn't see. In other words, he knew that he needed something. He just somehow looked, the solution, the apparent solution appeared somewhere else.
Right, yeah.
But then again, it could be argued that he has to go on that journey so he can actually discover what he actually...
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think... This is part of his journey.
And again, like when we were talking about in the beginning when he's wandering through the forest, it's fate, I think, that brings him. It's his calling that brings him to Christmas.
Right.
Because if he hadn't been introduced to Christmas, he wouldn't be able to know what those feelings are.
Right, he would...
There's lots of great mythological beats in this, and he has to sort of die and be reborn to understand.
Yeah,
That happens.
Right.
And I love just how they bring in, you know, everything that's stereotypically Halloween. You know, you get like all those kind of mythologies. You get all the stereotypical Christmas mythologies, too, even the little Rudolph.
I just wrote this movie also reminds me of another movie at the same time. And I just realized why it's Scrooge. And it's because Danny Elfman does a score for that as well.
Yeah. If Danny Elfman's done a score for a movie, usually it's a pretty dang good film.
Now starts the best part of the film.
Yes.
Oh,
little kid. I love that, too. I love the way he's going down the stairs like an airplane, because kids do that. It's so fun. And look at the little floors in this house. How meticulous those are. Like the wood panel flooring.
I like the slate chimney.
I like the voice he thinks is the Santa voice, too.
And then cackles maniacally.
Yeah.
Oh, this is my favorite part. That's right. And what did Santa bring you, honey?
Good moment.
And what did Santa... That was a great voice.
Yeah.
That's a good shadow.
Yeah.
Lots of good shadows in this movie.
Yeah, they do use that very well.
There's a Tim Burton snake.
Yep.
That was in Beetlejuice.
Yeah, the sand snakes.
Yeah. Oh, that's the man. See, I kind of wanted the kids to really enjoy the toys.
But they're not in the right... That's what I was saying before. You know, they're not in the right mind frame. Like, if it was Halloween and this was happening, they would totally accept it and probably, really give into it, you know?
Right. This is great storytelling. It just goes from chimney to chimney. All you do is you hear the screams.
And again, just the shadow.
The snake eating the tree. It's great. I mean, this is just a great look.
I love that. No Santa.
Stoke up the fire.
He thinks it's a success. It's so funny.
I gotta say, I love all those phones.
Uh-huh.
I'm just looking at like, oh, that'd be so cool to animate those phones.
And just to make them. Maybe. You know, not even animate them, just like the, whoever originally made them.
Well, true. I just would want to play with the phones. Yeah. I never was much of a big model maker. It's like I like to, you know, when I animated things, I like to take things that I could find and animate them. I didn't like necessarily like to make things. Great searchlights.
Here we go again with the technology being, you know, not modern technology by any means.
Yeah, it's like more like it's more like World War II. Yeah, World War II technology. Well, that's true. I mean, the time frame for this film is not.
I love that feel when you do like sort of Lost somewhere in the 20th century, you know, and you see some movies do that so effectively where you can't really pinpoint where you are.
I love this too. When they reveal. Yeah.
I like the hand.
That's what I love. Never mind. It's just her leg.
Yeah.
Too late.
Oh, actually, one of the films that Tim Burton's doing next, too, is The Addams Family, doing it animated like this.
Oh, I like that.
In the style of the cartoons from The New Yorker.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I like that idea. Yeah. It's a good idea.
He's doing a lot of things. Oh, not good.
This was Barry Levinson that did the movies in the early 90s.
I like those.
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Those are great.
Excuse Barry Sonnenfeld. Barry Sonnenfeld.
Yeah.
I thought Christine Ricci was awesome.
Yep, she's perfect. I even like the sequel, Addams Family Values.
Actually, yeah.
I like them both.
Oh, I like the whole part where she's at camp.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is like my favorite part.
That's so funny, yeah.
And
and she gets a little boyfriend.
Her little boyfriend is David Krumholtz.
Yeah.
When he was really young.
And the fantastic Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, actually, I have a friend of mine who dated Pugsley.
Really? That's funny.
You know, whenever I hear anybody mention any movie he's in, I always have to mention him. That Raul Julia is just one of my favorite actors of all time.
Yeah. And
that was one of his last roles, right?
Dearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like,
I think the second film was his last role.
Yeah. Oh, he was great. He really was great.
You think of a film like Tequila Sunrise. If he wasn't in that movie, you couldn't even watch it.
It's the second time you've mentioned it to me. I've never seen that. I got to see that. I know. Okay, put it right down. Tequila Sunrise. Because that's... is that Kurt Russell? Mel Gibson?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that poor little crying kid. They're so scared.
I like how the cops are like all in on this.
Another great shot coming up.
Because we live in a world where like Santa Claus is real, you know? So like the cops wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like
we live in a world where Santa Claus is real.
Here it is. I love this shot of him in the arms
of
the statue.
You were being redundant there, Heidi.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. Santa Claus is real.
Wow. Oh, is that Jack? Oh, wow.
Your Jack has to die and be reborn.
Yep. In the arms of an angel. Literally. Kind of.
Here's the realization. This was all a mistake.
Yeah.
The epiphany.
Yep. Yeah, you ruined Christmas. Feel bad about it.
The charred remains of Christmas.
And that this is like, gosh, I feel so bad for him right here, too, because it's this realization, like, he saw this Christmas thing, and it was so wonderful to him and so amazing to him. He couldn't even express it. And now this thing that he loved so much, he wanted to be participate in it, he's ruined.
Ah, but redemption is at hand.
Yeah, it's true. What a horrible feeling to have.
Well, the thing is, you know, the fact that he gets the chance for redemption, because it could be so bad that there would might not be any chance for redemption.
But you always get redemption on Christmas.
Exactly. Ah. It wouldn't be a Christmas movie.
Yep.
That would be a dark Christmas movie if there were no redemption.
There you go.
You always get a second chance on Christmas, or third or fourth. I love how you can see underneath, like, where the Santa Claus outfit is, like, shredded and peeling off is his little suit. It's mm-hmm. still, like, right underneath it. Aww.
And that's actually, in a lot of ways... Christmas is about rebirth. I mean, when you look to the
right,
pagan
yeah,
celebration
yeah.
of yeah. before the tree and that sort of thing has been around for
it's
a
winter
long,
solstice,
long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, winter solstice, rebirth, and it's sort of tied into it all.
Well, rebirth is technically spring solstice.
Right, but the coming of the changing of the tree is the decorated tree is the changing of
from fall. Out. I guess from the fall to the spring, it's the winter. Okay. Mm-hmm. That whole Tannenbaum thing, right?
That whole
exactly.
Tannenbaum thing.
Okay. That whole Tannenbaum thing.
But see, and I love this too. He left his post to go do this Christmas thing, and he left his Halloween town vulnerable.
Ah. And now Oogie Boogie is being bad, 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 bad. And I guess that's what I was saying before is that, you know, in a sense, he lost sight of who he was, who his true self was, what he was good at, what he was meant to do. Mm-hmm. When I was saying his mission, his duty.
Right.
And it's taken him away from so many things. And also it's made what he is responsible for vulnerable.
Right. Yeah.
I can't believe he cheated.
Oh. I know. I'm aghast.
I can't believe the boogeyman cheated.
Oh.
And he's scared of
he's
Jack.
So scared. And that I mean, you know, that's who Jack is. Jack is so awesome and so powerful that the Oogie Boogie Man is scared of him.
But now the Oogie Boogie Man is going...
He's in Oogie's world.
Yeah, but it's not a problem for him.
No, not really.
I mean, there's a reason he's the Pumpkin King.
They were hiding in an Iron Maiden. Oh, my God. So now we're getting our big battle at the end.
Yeah.
Of course.
And we're getting to see what Jack's good at.
That's true. We're getting to see Jack be a hero.
Yeah, live up to his
he's being
potential.
He's being Indiana Jones. Uh-oh. Yeah, there you go. Undone. Oh, he's
gross.
Full of bugs.
Awesome. Oh,
that is God.
Look at
Wicked Witch kind of moment there.
Like, and Jack's just got that looks like, man, you know, that's, oh.
Santa Claus has
Santa
to get
Santa
reaction.
Claus.
Santa crushed the bug.
No.
Grumpy Santa Claus is.
Wow. Santa's magical.
Of course he is. Oh. I can't believe you didn't either. You douche. You better get her like an awesome present.
So also sort of a touch. Was it Charlie Brown where you never saw any of the faces of the adults?
Yeah.
Yeah. And all you heard was the trombone.
Yep.
Similar.
But then you also get to see how awesome, like you got to see Jack at his awesomest, and now you get to see Santa at his awesomest, because even mm-hmm. though half of Christmas was like botched, Santa Claus can just like jump right in there and fix it all.
That's because he's Santa.
Because he's Santa. I like the, when he looks at Jack and he goes, "I'm Santa Claus." Like, who you don't even know, man.
Who do you think I am? You do Halloween, I do Christmas.
I travel around the entire world in one night.
And I go to every single mall between Thanksgiving and Christmas to hear what everyone wants also.
Well, those are his disciples.
No, that's Santa.
Oh. Well, when I was little, my mom told me that Santa had...
Disciples?
Yeah, he had, like, they worked for Santa because Santa couldn't be at all the malls and make all the toys. So these people were, like, handpicked by Santa to go and meet us. They were, like diplomats.
I think Santa actually... Okay, I could buy that, but I think Santa actually infiltrates once in a while and actually poses as one of his disciples.
Oh, yeah, just like Miracle on 34th Street.
See?
Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Aww.
Just to make sure everyone's doing their job.
And they get to have their own Christmas, which there is fun. Go. Like their own version of Christmas. Oh. Her song is really good earlier. I didn't comment on that, but I really like that song.
That's a really cool image they came up with.
Yeah. The
what's the one
curling
on the poster?
Hit O with the, yeah, with the moon behind it.
Aw, truth. See, you get a little bit of everything in this story. Fantastic.
Yeah.
The end. All right, I'll buy it.
Now.
Well, that's part of what this is about.
It's one of the few movies that as many new experiences. Times I see it, it just keeps...
Yep.
You know,
it's always good.
Always, always good.
Ho, ho, ho. Mm-hmm. Adaptation. Was this a book before? Caroline Thompson. There you go. Who also...
No, from the ideas.
Okay. Caroline Thompson wrote Edward Scissorhands. She also wrote E.T. Well, with Spielberg, but...
Actually, I had to mention he did do Frankenstein. Essentially, Edward Scissorhands was essentially
Frankenstein. In a way, is Frankenstein, yeah.
Which is great because it's his own version. Like that's what I like. Like that's why I think he's. That's why I don't like this Wizard of Oz or this. Well, that is an idea, but that Alice in Wonderland and the Charlie and Chocolate Factory thing is. I like seeing Tim Burton take something we're familiar with and then really make it his own, not just. Yeah. Like literally take it and run away with it, like with Alice in Wonderland. I mean, actually take an idea like he did with Edward Scissorhands of Frankenstein and make it a new mythology.
Right, and a lot of what he's done has been just existing properties and stuff like
that. Well, I think that's what...
Adaptations.
But that's such a common thing when you see anybody like that, be it a musician or a filmmaker or whatever, as they, you know, do so many different sorts of projects that they... that it, I guess it becomes difficult. And that's why when you think of guys, I don't know, somebody like David Bowie, who seems to reinvent himself with every project he does, that I think those kinds of guys that can year after year, you know, as they get older and older, manage to keep coming up with interesting stuff are really impressive characters.
Madonna.
I love all the different just job descriptions that are on here. Like there was like I forget what it was. It was something like
head wrangler,
supervisor.
Literally head wrangler. Yeah,
you just see things you never see in the credits of any other film, like an armature engineer.
Yeah, armatures. Yep. Mold makers, mold maker assistants,
character fabricators.
And how long? I mean, I can only imagine this probably took about a year to shoot.
Oh, yeah. It always takes a year or two. Yeah, or two. It takes a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, this is a shorter film, so. But I don't know.
But most animation's about this length.
Yeah. Well, at least stop motion.
Yeah. And give a shout out to those, to the, what are the Wallace and Gromit guys.
They're
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. I forget what that, what's that studio called? Why can't I think of it? Aardvark? Right now?
No.
No,
it's Aardman. Aardman.
Yeah.
Aardman. Why Aardvark?
I could see that. Coming together in one's brain.
Think of the ant and the aardvark.
Character voices.
There we go. Okay. Danny Elfman.
Yep. He was the clown with the tearaway face. Man under stairs.
Hmm.
Oh, the Wolfman. Glenn Walters. Well.
Fantastic.
Great movie.
Pretty darn good.
Pretty darn good is true. I like it. I'm glad we just watched it. I might watch it again still. you know, so I can sing.
Right.
Exactly.
Pixar. Pixar Animation.
There you go.
Back before, like, people knew who they were.
Oh, wow. That's right. Yeah, this is...
I mean, they didn't really have a name, like, you know.
This is way in the way back. Back when Pixar... I think Lucas had a hand in Pixar at that time. Lucas was one of the people who started Pixar.
Well, yeah, Pixar came out of...
came out of ILM?
ILM, yeah.
Okay.
I know that because I just saw a documentary on ILM.
I've been reading stuff about Lucas and stuff. Massage therapist? Wow. So it fits.
You need it.
Yep. And here's your music. Here comes Santa Claus, deck the halls. Yep. That was 93, folks.
93, wow.
1993. That was 17 years ago.
Yep.
Wow.
Now I remember why I didn't see this in the theater. It's because it was in that era where, like, I didn't go to the movie theater a lot because I was little.
Yeah.
My parents didn't always take me. I was only 10.
Hmm.
But when you saw it, you enjoyed it.
I did.
Yes. Good Christmas movie.
Great Christmas movie.
Yay!
Yay!
So, any final thoughts?
Still good? Love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
I don't know what else to say.
I think one of the reasons that I you know, say that's one of my top 10 favorite movies is that it just keeps staying the same quality level every time I see it. It doesn't ever feel dated to me or anything. It's so good every time.
So original. There'll never be anything quite like it. You know, it'll always stand
out.
So I think it will be one of those things that lives on far beyond its era, you know. Other movies from 1993 are not going to have the same kind of shelf life. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I mean, clearly it has because you know you're still talking about it.
Yeah.
So.
And I think it's one of the best holiday films. I think it's definitely one of the best animated films of all time. I don't think most people who would argue with that. You know, it's pretty.
Wow.
It's well done. I mean, on a technical level.
I'm trying to think of any other animated films to challenge you with on that one.
I mean, I don't know if I would say it's the best, but it's definitely, I mean, it's one of the best films, you know?
Right.
I mean, it changed what animation was.
I'd say it's probably the best stop-motion animation anyone's seen. I mean, stop-motion animation film. Yeah. I mean, stop-motion animation period that I'm trying to think of, but I mean through and through, because I know Henry Selick did James and the Giant Peach.
That was a great.
Yeah, that was great too. Yeah.
And there was and this Coraline.
But it's still not quite as good. You know what I mean? It's great, but it still just doesn't reach the same kind of level, because this is so. It has Nightmare has a unique quality that you know certain films do end up having, where they have something that's so unique about them. They have their own mythology, their own feeling, their own look, their own sense. You know, if you saw a character somewhere, like a figurine, you would know, oh, that's a Nightmare figurine, or it would make you think of Nightmare. It's just, and not very many projects, whether it's a film or an album or a painting, or, you know, have that kind of, that just unique soul, that unique presence, where it becomes something more than just what it is, more than just a movie.
So it's a whole different Christmas iconography, you know, it's, you right. know. Where you always Santa Claus and this, all of a sudden you have Jack Skellington as part of the Christmas iconography, which is just a whole interesting thing in and of itself.
Well, I think maybe the answer is that it fully realizes its, as you were saying, in a way, it fully realizes its mythology.
Yep.
It fully realizes what its goal is. I mean, in terms of expressing the Halloween holiday, the Christmas holiday, and the spirits behind it, and bringing it into one story. I mean, that definitely credit goes to the writing on that. The writing, of course, is always, you know, key, and Caroline Thompson is very good at that and bringing out the pathos and all that. So definitely that's probably huge hand. And then, of course, the animation, just the craft in bringing it to life.
Yeah.
You know, really delivers it. And the test of time. Yep. It's now 17 years later, and the two of you are still raving about it. And opening my eyes to The Nightmare Before Christmas. I don't know if I'll necessarily run out and watch it again.
Maybe you gotta just throw that soundtrack on your car, you know, for the holidays.
I could possibly do that. I could, if there's a Nightmare Before Christmas, you know, musical, maybe I'll go to it and sing along with it, or
I won't go. I'm not gonna go. I'm already telling the universe right now, you will not sell a ticket to this one. Heidi Hilliker will not be buying a ticket to that.
Wait, is this?
I don't want to see real people dressed up.
Wait, is this like you don't want to see the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie?
It's like that.
Okay, all
yep,
right.
I won't
okay.
see the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. I won't see Nightmare Before Christmas live action musical.
So don't piss off. So in other words, what you're saying is don't piss off your fan base.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Don't do that.
What about like a stunt show at Universal?
Oh. Well, I don't know. You can maybe get away with that, maybe.
No.
At Disney, at Disneyland, yeah, at Disneyland.
There you go. Have you done the Disneyland nightmare experience at the Haunted Mansion?
No.
Oh.
Is it good?
Oh.
It's fun.
That'd be cool.
It's fun to do.
So basically it's the Jack Skellington Nightmare World.
Yes, it's the Haunted Mansion sort of converted into Jack's world.
And do they just do that during Halloween?
Do they run the Halloween and through Christmas? I think, don't they? I can't remember for sure.
Wow, we'll have to look into that.
That would be that'd
yeah.
Be something.
I'd like to know. Maybe I would like to check that out. Because see, that seems more of like a nice like.
Fans,
yeah.
Fun thing, yeah,
right. You're not retelling the story,
right.
But you're allowing the world to live, which
right.
is what Disneyland and World is good for
right.
doing.
Exactly,
you can live those worlds.
Yep.
Wow, that's actually really cool. I've always liked the Haunted Mansion. I haven't been there in
absolutely.
A while. I guess I should go back.
Always one of my favorite little moments there at Disneyland.
Heck, if Tron wasn't coming out, they'd probably be showing it at the El Capitan for Christmas. But
that's
I will
right.
be.
Yeah,
I will be there
do.
Seeing Tron.
Oh. I'm hearing things. I don't know. It looks great.
It looks like
it's going to be great.
Tron and Daft Punk, give it to me.
Well, it looks great and probably sound great. I'm pulling for the story to actually pull it out, and who knows what will happen.
I mean, but have you seen Tron?
I
keep my expectation levels right in par with the original film, and I think I won't be disappointed.
Someone came up to me just the other day asking me, hey Serge, because of course I know everything. You know where I could find Tron? And I was like, you can't find it? Yeah, I've been trying to find it. I can't find it on Netflix or anything, so I thought you'd know. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if Disney did not re-release that, so what's that
really?
Saying? No, they didn't, and it's kind of hard to find it, so I'm like, why? Who knows? Maybe because maybe they just want everyone to just focus on Tron Legacy.
Yeah, that's weird.
It is, or who knows? It'll be interesting to see how Tron Legacy does and what its real story is.
They'll pull
I got a copy of Tron.
The vault,
I just watched it the other day, just for like a warm up.
So I haven't seen that in years. So
it's exactly how you remember it.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was afraid of. So looks real good, and then just
it still looks great though. Like I just watched it the other day, and I probably watched it about 5 years ago was the last time I watched it, and I just watched it the other day, and it's still every time I watch it, I'm still amazed. Like even when I watched it 5 years ago, I was like, still looks great.
What you really have to realize too is that's all, or for the most part, I think is all analog technology.
It
that's
is.
Not
no, this was like
80,
this is 82.
No, but and then there's actual cell animation in it, which I mean, and then ties right into the whole nightmare discussion, though, is like when you have really quality animation, it doesn't age.
Right. And that was the big thing about Tron Man at the time. It was very, no one had seen anything that kind of special effects. It was like the same year also that we had, what was it? It was 81, 82. It was Road Warrior, E.T., Poltergeist, Blade Runner, of course.
Right. It was just
that whole year.
That was like a really good
good for special effects.
Special effects era animation.
And it made it.
And ideas. Taking something that we already knew we could do.
Right.
And applying it in a better way. You know what I mean? Applying it in a way, I don't know, just really using the resources.
Right. Yeah, so. Well, that's it. And definitely and Tron definitely had its fans, I mean, over all these years. So clearly for it to spawn a sequel almost 30 years later is amazing.
Fanboy film for sure.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Tron Legacy is. Yes, definitely will be. So
I'll be there.
I'm going to see. I'll see how I fare. I know I'll go see it. And that's one of the films I want to go see.
Mm-hmm. There will be a lot of 40-year-old virgins watching Tron Legacy.
I don't know if I'm going to go when it opens, but I do want to see.
I bet a lot of kids.
Oh yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
they've been advertising that for the past year.
That's what's great about it though. It's like it's actually like a family movie, you know, like parents probably are at the age where they probably saw it when they were younger.
I just want to see
the first one.
I want to see Jeff Bridges versus Jeff Bridges.
That's what I want to see.
Go, Jeff. All right. On that note, I'm going to Disneyland right now to go see the Haunted Mansion.
Let's
so
do that. Jump in the car.
Let's go.
And we'll listen to the soundtrack on the way.
That's right. Okay. So thank you very much, everybody. This has been
Michael Smith
and
Heidi Hilliker
and Serge Delpierre, and this has been Film Grok. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.